to The Happy Writer. This is a podcast that aims to bring readers more books to enjoy and to help authors find more joy in their writing. I'm your host, Marissa Meyer. Thanks for joining me. We have a few housekeeping things to go over today. For starters, we want your opinions on this podcast. What do you like? What do you not like? What could I be doing better? What do you want more of, less of, et cetera, et cetera? You can tell us by filling out our quick Google survey. That link can be found on our Instagram at Happy Writer Podcast. It shouldn't take more than 10 minutes to complete. And if you submit your email address at the end of the survey, then you will be entered into a random drawing. And one winner will get the chance to co-host an episode of this podcast along with me and a mutually agreed upon guest. Super exciting. We did this once before last year and it was so fun. So check it out. Fill out the survey. You have until June 21st to do that and be entered into the contest. We are also having one of our regular monthly contests on Instagram again. I'm recording this at the beginning of the month and I don't actually know what the contest is yet because Joanne is always in charge of those things. But I did want to put it out there because we are going to be on break the next 2 weeks. So before we go, I wanted you guys to know that there is another contest happening. Check it out on our Instagram page at Happy Writer Podcast. And if you participate, then you could be entered to win a free book. So yes, as I said before, we will be on vacation. This is our last episode now until June 28th. Why? Because we are vaccinated here in my family. Hooray! And we are going on a trip. I am so excited to leave Washington to go out in the world. We're going to Hershey, Pennsylvania, which none of us have ever been there before, and I'm super excited to ride some roller coasters and eat a ton of chocolate, and we're also going to go see some fireflies because we don't have fireflies here in Washington, and my mother-in-law is going with us, and that was one of her big wish list items was to go see real fireflies, so we are all so excited, and that's why I won't be here the next couple of weeks talking to you guys, but we will be back at the end of the month. And as I'm sure you can imagine, that is the thing that is making me so, so happy right now, getting to actually travel again. Hooray! Okay. And of course, I am so happy to be talking to today's guest. She works in social media and has a fabulous YouTube channel in which she shares tips and information all about her publishing journey. Her debut novel, Blood Like Magic, is coming out next week on June 15th. Please welcome Lizelle Sanbury.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Your debut novel is coming out so soon. How are you feeling?
Yeah, it's very strange and surreal because you know, I've waited for this for so long. We got the book deal and now it's like 2 years later. So it's been 2 years of lead up to this, but now it just feels all very strange that it's happening, even though it was always supposed to happen. It's very much like, oh, it's happening now.
It's real. It's real. That's funny. Do you think, because I know a lot of books were pushed back due to the pandemic and have had kind of a longer publication schedule than is normal. Do you feel like it being now 2 years later, has it just been like this awesome buildup to this huge crescendo? Or do you feel like having such a long publication schedule has left it feeling a little anticlimactic at this point?
I feel like I'm still really excited for it, but I am like a very impatient person. So the whole first year, I was basically putting it out of my mind and trying to distract myself with other things. And then when there was 1 year left and we started doing more things, then the impatience started to build. So it's been a lot of anticipation, but I'm still really excited about it because I've just been so impatient for it for so long.
Yeah.
I'm very much like, oh my gosh, I can't wait for it to just be out. And then I'll just always have a book out and that will be amazing. I won't have to anticipate so painfully anymore.
Right. No, it is. It is such a huge accomplishment. It's so exciting. Congratulations. You're there.
Yeah, thank you. It's very, very, very exciting. Definitely childhood dream come true.
I know the feeling. I know exactly what you mean. So why don't we start with you telling listeners about your book, Blood Like Magic?
Absolutely. So Blood Like Magic is about a family of Black witches living in a near future Toronto, and in particular, 16-year-old Voya Thomas, who is given the impossible task of either killing her first love or losing her family's magic forever.
And it's such a good premise. There's so much tension just built into that one little elevator pitch.
Yeah, just high stakes is what I really like.
Super high stakes. And even that idea, like to save her family's magic, that isn't even all of it. There's so much more. There's so much at stake in this book for this poor, poor protagonist.
Yeah, it's true. I say out of all my books I've written, I am the most mean to Voya, and she has to do the most stuff.
She really does. I felt for her so much. There's so many points in this book where I was like, what would I do? How could you choose? How could you make these decisions? And obviously we see her struggling with it so much, and it felt so visceral and so real. So really well done. And just the whole premise behind this book is so good.
Thank you so much.
So there's a ton, as I mentioned kind of before we started the recording, I have a super long list of questions, and I know we won't get to half of them because there is so much that you could dig into with this book. So I thought that we would just start with the very first line and just kind of start working our way through the pages.
Sounds great.
Yeah, no, I'm obviously being facetious, but the opening line of this book is so good that I had to draw attention to it. Do you mind if I read it? For people?
Absolutely. Go ahead.
So, guys, listen to this opening line. There's something about lounging in a bath of blood that makes me want to stay until my fingers shrivel enough to show the outlines of my bones. If that doesn't give you chills, I love this. I love this opening line. I love how creepy it is. It's macabre. There's this great visual of like literally bathing in a pool of blood. How many times did you write or rewrite or agonize over writing this perfect first line?
It's kind of funny because the first line is like one of the few things in the book that has been almost the same throughout the entire process.
No, you're one of those.
I did some tweaking, I think, to the latter half of the sentence, but a lot of it was very similar because when I had envisioned this book, I started with that visual of Voya in that bath of blood. And because that was so strong right from the beginning, it really stuck. And so that first line was like the culmination of finally putting onto paper this idea that I'd had percolating in my head.
So interesting, because I have had books where that first line just kind of like pops into your head and is just right. But I feel like way more often for me, I go back and I tweak and I rearrange and I just like spend so much time on that first line, that first paragraph, that first page, trying to get it, you know, so good that no one's going to be able to resist getting into this book. So I love that. I love that this wonderful opening was just like, this is it. This is the start of our story.
Yeah, I think that plays into my impatience too. I tend to draft fast and I don't let myself dwell on anything for very long because I'm like, you just need to finish this and then you can go back and you can fix and you can tweak and you can do whatever. But we can't sit here and go over this over and over for half an hour. We need to move on.
Right. No, I totally know what you're saying. I believe in the fast first drafts also. So I'm really curious. So you say that vision of her in this bath of blood was one of the catalysts for this story, because I had wondered about that as you're reading. Of course, we know this is a book with magic. It's right there in the title. We know it's a book about a witch and a family of witches, but before too long, as we're reading, it's not a fantasy novel. I mean, it has a very futuristic setting, and there's a lot of high technology and talk of robotics and genetics and all of this. So at what point did that start to come into the developing of the story? Was that kind of ingrained from the beginning, or did that kind of come into play later as you were writing and figuring it out?
That was definitely ingrained in the beginning, because I had wanted to write about that family of Black witches in Toronto. And for whatever reason, in how my brain works, I was like, what if it was in the future? And then I latched onto it and I just loved it. And I was like, I have to set it in the future now. But something that I was really particular about with it is that I needed the fantasy and the sci-fi to blend in a way that they could not be pulled apart. Because I had heard a lot about, you know, sometimes publishers not really wanting the genre mix. And I felt super paranoid that if they weren't mixed heavily enough, I would be asked, well, why don't you just take it out and just make it an urban fantasy about witches? And so the technology right from the start, I was like, I'm going to put this in and I'm going to make sure that the witches need the technology and that the technology in some way also relies on the witches.
That's so interesting. So when you did start querying and searching for agents and publishers, what sort of reactions were you getting from people on this very blended genre?
It's really interesting, because from agents, I don't remember it ever being mentioned, but it became a really big thing on submission when we were submitting to publishers. That was like the most prevalent feedback I got was, I'm not sure where to place the book due to the genre mix. I'm not sure how to sell the book due to the genre mix, or something about the genre mix vaguely isn't working. So that was an interesting part of that process, because me and my agent were both very much like, well, we're not going to take it out. And if we try and take it out the way I've written it, like, the book would fall apart. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be like this. And hopefully we can find someone that does know how to place in it and is ready to figure out how to present it to the wider world. And that ended up working out.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of feels like the sort of thing where once you find that editor or that publisher that's right for the book, they would just have to embrace it heartily. Like, I love this, and we will find a way to find its readers.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Did you feel that, like, once you did get the book deal? I have to imagine your team is like so behind this.
Yeah, I really felt like that. My editor, I really felt like she was like, I love this book. I have a spot for this book. I don't even remember if the genre mix even came up necessarily. It was just like, yeah, absolutely, we're gonna work together on this book. And I've had a lot of great support from the team on the book. And the Canadian team especially are very excited about the Toronto setting. So yeah, it ended up working out. It was like, I guess, a little bit of a gamble in that I went into it knowing that genre mix would be hard for some people, but I also felt like that was a big part of what set the book apart, and what made it feel different to me. So I'm really excited that we found a home.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I totally know it, because my first series, The Lunar Chronicles, also kind of had this blend of sci-fi and fantasy. But I remember those fears of like, are people really going to go along with fairy tales and cyborgs and robots and spaceships? And I remember being really nervous about that when I started querying. But same sort of thing, like, once it found its home, they were so excited, and a lot of talk about how it sets it apart. Like, it's not your typical fairy tale retelling, or in your case, it's not your typical witch story. You know, there's this totally new added element of high technology and genetics and how these things work together. And it makes for just a really cool world that you're introducing us to.
Absolutely. And then it would change the book as well if you didn't have mm-hmm. that. Like, I would find it really difficult to picture the Lunar Chronicles without those elements together.
Right.
Because it just worked that way, right?
Yeah. And also, I mean, there's something to be said, I think, for how us writers, you know, the spark of the story and the thing that you get excited about at the beginning, there's a reason that you're getting excited about it. And yeah, it might create some complications for where do we shelve this, or which, you know, Goodreads profile are we going to market this on, or whatever. But if you can look past that, like, I think that if the author is excited and has an idea that they're really into, then the idea is that there's going to be readers out there who also are really craving this thing.
Absolutely.
So kind of on that note, you talked about how important it was to you to balance the fantasy and the magic with the technology and science fiction. What were some of the challenges that you found in trying to find a nice blend of these two very different genres?
The challenges were a lot in just figuring out how to make these two worlds just tied to each other in a way that was very difficult to separate. So a lot of the time it was me thinking, okay, what if witches didn't have access to this technology? Could everything be normal for them, or could it not? And what if, you know, the genetics company, if they didn't have any sort of tie to that world, then could it still be what it is? And I had to ask myself a lot of those questions and do that. And I really also relied a lot on the characters and character history and how they're interacting with each other, because the fact that Voya and Luke are each from those different worlds, you know, he's an intern at the genetics company and potentially in line to run the company, and Voya is, of course, part of this witch community. The fact that they are kind of forced together in this situation automatically kind of creates that bond between the magic and the technology just through their characters. So that helped me. And then I kind of built on that over time as well. But yeah, a lot of the challenges were just kind of asking myself many, many questions, and my agent asking me questions and my editor asking me questions and trying to answer them all in a way that felt coherent and in a way that worked and blended into the story and enriched it, instead of kind of feeling like things I was just tacking on.
I know that feeling very well. Did you, so you mentioned before that you are kind of a fast first drafter, and that you like to like get it down on the page and know that you can come back and fix it later. With the world building and developing the magic system and developing, you know, how these two things are going to play off of each other, how much of that was planned when you started writing, say, your first draft, or how much was discovered as you were going? Did you have a draft where you had like one thing with the technology or the magic, and then later we're like, okay, we're going to scrap that whole thing and try this now? Like, how did that all come together?
So in writing the first draft of this book, I planned like none of the world building whatsoever. I just kind of jumped in and discovery wrote everything, which I later regretted, and I no longer do that because it creates regrets. So I was discovering a lot along the way, and then through revisions, I was having to fix a lot of the magic rules. I was having to reconfigure how things worked, because I would say, this is like a rule for magic, and then I would have too many rules and things would get mm-hmm. too complicated, and then I had to dial back the rules. But then if I dialed back the rules, some things were then difficult story-wise. And so that created a lot of issues. But definitely the layers of like having readers and my agent and my editor ask questions about, okay, but what about this? And what about this? Mm-hmm. That helped me a lot with the magic world building, because when I started out with that magic system, I had a small set of very specific rules. And that was that they needed to use blood if they wanted to cast spells. And if they weren't using blood, they could use their gift. And that was the only time they can use magic without requiring blood. But there's also two factions in the witch community. There's the pure witches and the impure witches, which is the pure witches only use their blood to cast magic, and the impure witches use the blood of others to cast magic. And that was also something I had to tweak, because in the original drafts, they just always had to kill someone to use magic, but then that created difficulty because it was like, how many dead bodies are we going to have in this city?
Suddenly we're writing a murder mystery.
Yeah, exactly. And then it made it difficult to kind of have nuance between families if everyone was always having to murder someone to use that sort of magic. So that was one of those things that had to be developed. And then the technology, specifically the genetic matchmaking, I changed several times. The first time I had the matchmaking, I like forced them to go on all these dates, and then I wasn't doing enough dates, and so I added more dates. And then my agent was kind of like, does this seem like it fits in the future? And I was thinking about current dating apps, and like, nobody's forcing you to go on a date. You just look at your phone and you see who you're matched with, and you do the rest of the work. And then I realized that made a lot more sense. So then I had to scrap all of the dates that I did and recast everything. And so that mechanic changed a lot. And then some like tweaks with the technology as well changed. So a lot, I did not do very good world building in the beginning, and a lot of it came through in revisions. And like the strength of the world building is really a strength of all the revising.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, I kind of love the idea of Luke being forced to go on a bunch of dates.
Oh, he hated them.
He hated them all. Exactly. It sounds like his worst form of torture.
Exactly. Yeah.
Did you feel sad about anything that ended up getting lost over all those revisions?
I thought I would, but I really didn't. Yeah. And I remember in one of my earlier revisions with my agent, she was like, because I used to have more family members. I used to have one more. And she was like, there's a lot of family members. And she's like, this is your choice, but maybe cut one. And I'm going to say Chase. And at the time I was like, cut Chase. I never could do that. But then I calmed down and I said, let me see what the book would look like if I cut him. And it changed almost nothing. And then I realized he was very unnecessary. And so Chase is not in the book.
Yeah. Poor Chase.
Yeah.
I don't know Chase, but I feel bad for Chase.
It's one of those things where like, I would think that I would miss that, but I really didn't. And then I gave his gift to Keisha and it ended up working out way better. And then like the date scenes, I thought I would miss, but I really didn't miss them. Mm-hmm. I always take things that I'm taking out and I like put them in a little folder aside in case I decide that I do love and miss them. But I never end up looking in that folder because I only make changes that I agree with. And so I don't usually have anything that I regret. And it's rare for me to have like a sort of random fun scene that isn't related to anything that I just put in because I thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. Which I think would be the only thing that I would miss. But I made sure that all of the stuff I put in that I thought was fun had integral plot points so they could never be cut.
There you like go. That's the way to do it.
Like the fashion show. I was like, I want a fashion show.
In this book of magic and science fiction and blood and witches.
Absolutely.
Really a fashion show.
Yeah, just take a break from all the, you know, potential murdering and go to a fun fashion show.
Well, I am the same way. Whenever I cut anything, I always stuff it into a folder. Because it's a lot easier, I think, to cut something if you know that it's not disappearing into the ether. If you're like, no, but I could get it back if I really wanted it. And I feel like that takes a lot of the pain of editing away. But I never go back. I never think like, oh, but that one random scene like is actually really important. It's like, no, you cut it for a reason. And I think you kind of have to listen to those instincts. And it makes for great bonus content later.
Absolutely. That's a good reason to keep it. For those of you, for those people that are like, oh, well, I still have to keep it even though I have no use for it.
Right.
Then you can always pull it out for that reason.
Yeah, it's a blog post later. Here's some content of these characters that you love that didn't make it into the book.
Yeah.
So you talked about the family. I really want to talk about writing family dynamics, because we have Voya. She lives in this household with a big extended family, and they're so great. They're all such unique personalities, and I know that it can be really hard to write a big cast of characters and one, make them all feel authentic and unique in their own ways. And also like to give each of them their due, to not make anyone feel like, you know, oh, they're just kind of hanging out in the background and they're not really important, or they're kind of falling through the cracks of the plot. I know that that's a big challenge. So for you, like, what were some of the things that you were thinking about in crafting this family and then just kind of writing their dynamics and their relationships with Voya and with each other?
Yeah, it was interesting. It was a lot of discovery, which is interesting when I think now of how I write books, because I plot very meticulously. But at the time, I had kind of just decided these were the family members, and I had thought of, you know, how their kind of personality was. And then I just kind of went with it and kept everything in my head, which now to me seems completely bonkers, but just in my head, kept every character. And I was like, this is how this character is, and this is how this character is personality wise. And then over time, I would add onto like their backstories and their goals and that sort of thing. And so a lot of the characters, by the end of the first draft, I had a very good feeling for what each family member was like. But I did need to, in a later revision, I had to write out every single family member, and I had to write, okay, what is their goal? So that I could explicitly have it instead of just holding it in my head. And also, what do they want Voya to do? So are they team kill Luke? Are they team we think you could do something else? Are they team I don't have any ideas, but murder is wrong? And basically kind of slotted them all into that, because something, one of the notes I had gotten was that it seemed like some of the family members had this like hive agreement. And that's obviously not really realistic. Like, they all have their own stakes in what Voya is doing, and their own feelings about it. So that really helped me writing that down for each of them, and then kind of sticking it in my head, and then making sure that I was, when I was going through and doing all of those scenes, I was remembering, okay, this is what Keisha thinks, and this is what Granny thinks, and this is what Alex thinks. And also, how are those going to interact with each other? Because, you know, even though Keisha disagrees with both Granny and Alex, Granny is the leader of the family, and she's never going to say anything to her, but she can say something to Alex, or she can say something to Voya about how she feels. Mm-hmm. And all of those. So it was a lot of like, it was partially discovery and then partially getting down and like bullet pointing what everyone wanted. But it was nice for me because I had felt their personality so strongly that that wasn't the thing I had to write down. The thing I just had to write down was, what do they want? And then I could blend it into how I envision that character.
Mm-hmm. That is a really great strategy. And as you were talking, I was thinking about how the book has such great subtext throughout. And I don't know if subtext is something that's really come up much on this podcast. So for listeners who may not be familiar, it's this idea that like there's more in the story than what's on the surface, you know, things that people aren't saying that isn't on the page, but you kind of get a feel for it anyway. And there's a lot of that in this book, and it makes so much sense now hearing how you went about like making these decisions and having this idea of what was in each of these characters' heads, even if they don't actually come out and say it every time, because you really felt that it really came across very strongly.
I'm really glad about that, because that's definitely what I wanted, especially because for a lot of the book, you know, everybody's kind of keeping their own little secrets, but they're still having reactions to things that are happening based on what they know that Voya may or may not know.
Right. And you've set up this challenge for Voya in that it has to be her decision. Like she has to make the choice herself. And so it's like the rest of the family, they can't give her their opinions. Like they're not really allowed to try to push her one direction or another. And yet, obviously, they have opinions. Obviously, this is something that's affecting all of them. So that's a great, great tip. I love that, kind of working with your secondary characters.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to something that kind of came up before that we didn't really expand on yet, is this idea of there being pure witches and impure witches. And the impure ones kill and murder other people in order to cast their magic. And the pure witches use their own blood for it. And it's so fascinating to me, because I think if someone were just to hear that, they would think, oh, okay, the impure witches are the villains, clearly. But you didn't do that. Like, there's so much push and pull with the ethics that's happening in this book, and whether or not it's okay for the ends to justify the means. Is it okay to do a horrible thing if you have good intentions and if you're accomplishing something for the greater good? And I love it. And there's, of course, no easy answers. We see Voya struggling with it. We see other characters struggling with it. I want to know, for you in writing this book, how much did you feel like you had a clear idea of what's right and wrong? Or did you feel yourself kind of getting pulled in different ways as you're kind of being forced to create these arguments in favor of different ideologies here?
Yeah, I definitely found it difficult because I purposely made things very gray. So it was very difficult to say, oh, well, these people are just bad, full stop, because they're, every time an impure witch kills or tortures or whatever to get magic and get extra magic, they have to have a pure intention. So they're torturing this person to get magic, but they're using it to help save children who are in need. And the big thing with the other family in the book, the Davises, is that they kill a person every 2 years, but they use it to protect the Carabana Festival, which is a Caribbean festival that happens in Toronto, in which there's a lot of Black people and there has been violence and police violence in the past. And so it's, yes, we're killing a person, but we're using it to help the wider community. And conversely, with Voya's family, they're pure witches and they don't kill people for magic, but they don't help their community. They don't go out of their way to assist people. They don't create community. They're very much about them and their own. And Voya really feels that struggle because she used to feel a part of the wider community, but now she feels very disjointed from it. And she's also has her friend that's missing and her family won't help. And so I really made sure that I had those gray bits because I find that really fascinating, to be pushed into that moral dilemma of, is this totally bad or is this totally good or like which is right? I myself, I'm like, you probably shouldn't kill people. So. But I love having
general rule for life.
Yeah. It's a good rule of thumb. But at the same time, I can't, there are lots of those characters from those families who I love and who I think are fantastic. And I love them as characters, even knowing that this is something that they're co-signing and something that they are doing. And that was definitely something I really wanted in the book. I definitely want people to kind of struggle with that. Johan, especially, who is the de facto leader of the Davis family in his mother's absence, he is like my most great character. And I love him so much because he's terrible, but he's also really great. And he's kind of the only person in the community that consistently goes out of his way to help the wider community in a way that nobody else does, even though he's like the worst perpetrator.
No, I love that too. I love books that force me to think about things like this, because I'm with you, like probably not a good idea to murder somebody. But you also, in reading these scenes and in reading their motivation, the reasons that they're doing these things, you can't vilify them. Like, you can't say, well, you're a horrible person. Like, you did such a great job of balancing the good with the bad and making it such a dilemma and such a question of ethics that I, throughout the whole book, was like, I don't know what I would think. I don't know what I would do here, which is the mark, of course, of a great book, that it makes you think so hard. I loved it.
Yay, I love that. That's definitely what I want, especially with Voya, because she's now at the intersection in that she's been raised her whole life to be like, we're pure witches and we don't kill people anymore. But then she gets this task and suddenly people start flipping switch and start saying to her, oh, well, maybe in this particular case, you should kill this person. And she's very much like, but that's not what you told me. And that's not how you raised me. So why now, for us in particular, this is okay when you really condemn everyone else who has done that. So I'm definitely excited about that.
Yeah, so I could not help feeling as, and I'm not going to spoil anything, we'll keep it all very vague, but as I'm reading the last few chapters of this book, I couldn't help feeling like it felt like a great origin story for a superhero and a supervillain who were like supposed to be archenemies. Is it just me? Was there any part of you that like was going for that?
Yeah, I totally feel that. And there's definitely some intentionality in the way that it ends.
Because I'm not expecting it. It's a witch book. It's a, you know, it's not superheroes, but those last few chapters, I was like, oh, I think I see what's happening here.
Yeah, it's definitely that dynamic without being superheroes. And that's definitely something that I was going for. Again, because I'm constantly mean to Voya.
Really mean to poor Voya.
But I've always loved that sort of like tension and, you know, yeah, definitely that origin story of like, are you seeing what could become this or what could become that? And you don't kind of know. But yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really happy about how that comes together.
Yes. No, it was so powerful. And just seeing how things are so complicated and so intertwined. So of course the natural question is there going to be more? Are we working with a duology, a trilogy? What is happening? Where do we go from here?
So it's going to be a duology. So there will be a second and final book next year. I always planned it as two books, which is nice for me because then I don't have to have any gnawing indecision and I can feel like, okay, this was always how it's going to be. And now this has wrapped up like this. But I do definitely, we'll see how things go, but I wouldn't be opposed to doing a sort of spin-off in the future. I definitely have some ideas about that, but we'll see.
would pretend this potential spinoff be from some of the other characters in the family?
I think it would be a brand new character, but they would definitely make cameos. They would be involved.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Because I feel, again, back to like how complex and well developed the family is, every one of them could have their own story.
Yeah, they're definitely like that.
Yes. Yes. Okay, well, cool. I'm so glad to hear that I figured there was going to be a second one because you didn't exactly leave us on like a great place.
Yeah, I wouldn't end it like that. I'm mean, but I'm not that mean.
Yes. Oh, I'm so excited to see where it goes. There's so many things that could happen in it. Okay. Before we start wrapping things up, I do want to take a moment to tell people about your YouTube channel. Because I was on, you know, surfing through some of the videos and you have a ton of content on it. Videos about your experience as a debut author and writing and editing but also like a lot of nitty gritty publishing stuff. And I just think it's a brilliant resource. So aspiring writers, all writers listening to this, I hope that they'll go check it out. So do you want to just tell people a little bit about it?
Absolutely. So I started this YouTube channel originally, partially because I wanted to learn about video production, but partially because I remembered all the videos I had seen of other people's experiences. And it was just such a helpful resource just to see what they had gone through and to learn more about their journeys. And so that's really what I went into creating videos about. So there are videos about how I got my agent and, about getting book deals. There are videos that are vlogs as I work on several projects. So as I work on Blood Like Magic or the sequel edits or my 2023 book, Butcher Birds, basically all my little project nitty gritties, if you want to kind of dive into that day-to-day author life. And I also have discussion videos where I talk about publishing things or writer things. I've done some interviews with some other authors as well. So it really runs the gamut in terms of content, but really the goal is to help other writers kind of see inside the process, but also in some ways can help them relate at different stages if they're going through similar processes.
Yeah. No, I think it's so good to talk about the journey, and because everyone's journey is different, of course, and everyone's publication story is different and Hunt for the Agent is like, it's all different, but there are similarities and there are parts of the process that we can all relate to, or we know what it's like to be there, or maybe you're a new author and this is just new and terrifying and overwhelming. And you just want to feel like, okay, people have been there before me and I'm going to come through on the other side. And I just think it's such a great thing for us to talk and bond about these different stages.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I loved. And that's what I loved when I was watching people's videos, because, you know, I was like, this is this person's agent story. And they also searched for however many years. So I'm like, okay, not everybody is just instantly doing this right off the bat. Or you're watching someone work on a project and they're like, this doesn't really work for me. And they drop the project and they do a new project. And so if you have to drop a project, it's not like I'm the only person that's ever had to do this, even though you know that objectively is not true. It's a different thing to see it happening.
Yes. And to see that someone dropped that project or made that decision and came out just fine on the other side. Like, it's not the end of the world if you have to take a left turn once in a while.
Absolutely.
Did you start the YouTube channel before or after you had your book deal?
I started it when I knew I had a book deal, but I hadn't announced it yet.
Okay.
I started making videos. So I made like a video about getting my agent and that sort of thing, and like kind of tested the waters and saw how that went. And I think that was primarily because when I had started on YouTube, I had felt like that I had to give advice all the time. And so I was like, okay, maybe at this point, I feel more comfortable giving a little bit more advice because I've got a little bit more experience. And then I realized that you don't need to give advice to people at all. That you can kind of decide what you want to do on the platform. And before that, I had been doing videos on IGTV just so I could show myself that I could regularly create and put out a video and to like give me a little bit of time to work up to YouTube. But yeah, and so that's kind of when I had started. And then when I got to announce my book deal, then I was able to fully announce on the channel.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean about advice, because like I'm constantly having people ask for advice for different, you know, writing advice or publishing advice. And there's obviously a place for that. But I think also a lot of people just want that connection and just want to, people are just curious, like what are you going through and what is your process? And, you know, it's okay that it's all different from person to person or writer to writer. But I think we just want to see what other writers are doing. Just know that we're not alone in this bizarre career we've chosen.
Absolutely. And that's what I really like, you know, about the community, is getting to see everyone be able to share their story and get to see all the different ways that people approach writing and that sort of thing. So yeah, I really like that. I'm glad it's not all advice, but some advice.
Right. Right. And that's just, it was just your name, right? Lizelle Sambury on
YouTube. Yes. Yeah. So
check it out, people. Okay. We are going to wrap this up with our happy writer bonus round. First question, what book makes you happy?
I think because I recently read it, but I read The Ones We're Meant to Find by Joan He, and it makes me so happy because I so desperately wanted dystopian and it just delivered everything and more. It gave me the dystopian feels. I had deep thoughts about the environment and our world, and it had such fun characters. I absolutely loved it.
I have that sitting on my desk right next to me as we're having this interview.
So
I haven't started it yet, but good. I'm so happy to hear you liked it. I'm excited to read it. What is your personal mantra?
Oh my gosh, persistence is key. I would say, like, everywhere from writing and, like, you know, pursuits and everything else, like, persistence has been the thing that has gotten me where I want to be, and persistence, especially with breaks. So I'm not continuously doing something all the time. Sometimes I take breaks when I need to, but I'm persistent in the things I want to achieve.
How do you fill the creative well?
TV, YouTube, movies, a lot of that sort of media, and occasionally books, but I try to mostly fill it with movies and TVs, because with books, I always worry that I'll, like, you know, inadvertently steal something from someone. So I'd rather creative well fill with TVs and movies, and then books is just like fun. I'm not thinking too hard about it.
What is your most favorite thing about being a writer?
Oh my gosh, that's a good question. I love the creation of the story. So I love that initial plotting, ideating phase where I think of different images in my head and I talk my friends and my mom's ear off with my ideas, and I make little aesthetic boards and I write down synopses. Like, that's my favorite bit of writing.
There's so much potential at the start of a story.
Yes. And you haven't had to, like, do the writing bit yet.
It's so easy in the beginning.
Yes. And I feel like you're so much kinder to yourself, and you're so open and excited and passionate, and everything is perfect.
Yes, I know. I love that phase too. We already kind of talked about this, but what are you working on next, or how much can you tell us about it?
So I guess the sequel is what's coming up most imminently. I just finished some edits on that, and I think I'm going to get some more edits soon. But yeah, the sequel to Blood Like Magic, the title we're not revealing yet, I don't think. Okay. But I'm really excited about it. I think it's a very good companion to the first book. You'll get to see some characters that had more minor roles in the first book get larger roles. And of course, the returning of familiar characters. And there are just so many bits in the sequel that I absolutely love. And I know people say like second book syndrome and like how second books are so hard, but it's been very strange for me, considering the fact that I also wrote this book during quarantine. But there are so many bits in it that I absolutely love, and I can't wait for people to read.
Lastly, where can people find you?
I am Lizelle Sambry everywhere. So on YouTube, lizellesambry.ca, because I am obnoxiously Canadian at times. And
that's kind of throw us off a little.
Yeah, that's the only thing. I didn't want a .com. I wanted a .ca.
I like that. Show your Canadian pride.
Right? I think it's nice. And Twitter, Instagram. I do have a TikTok. I am not on there a lot because I don't have auto captions and I got frustrated doing my own captions. But eventually I will put more on there.
Awesome. Lizelle, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Readers, please check out Blood Like Magic. It comes out on June 15th and is currently available for pre-order. Of course, we always encourage you to support your local indie bookstore if you can. If you don't have a local indie, you can check out our affiliate store at bookshop.org/shop/Marissa Meyer. Again, we will be on break for the next couple of weeks, but we will be back on June 28th with a super cute contemporary romance, Tokyo Ever After by Amiko Jean. That one is out now if you want to go ahead and get your copy in advance. If you're enjoying these conversations, please subscribe and follow us on Instagram at Marissa Meyer Author and at Happy Writer Podcast. Until next time, stay healthy, stay cozy, and whatever life throws at you today, I do hope that now you're feeling a little bit happier.